Chapter 46. Hicks looked from the Vietnamese woman to the gun on the console and then to Bishop.
"Was that for us?" he asked. "If we were..."
"Yes." Bishop picked up his tools and adjusted the lamp slightly before he bent over the console again. Most of the time, Hicks found Bishop's unshakable composure reassuring and, once in a while, maddening. At the moment, however, it was disturbingly cold-blooded. But then, an artificial person was cold-blooded, ruled by their programming, a series of orders to follow. It was just that Bishop's orders were factory-installed. He had no choice but to obey. Hicks had never imagined any artificial person would be capable of interpreting these orders, yet somehow Bishop had learned to read between the lines of his programming to find deeper meaning. As a result, he had extended the original command to protect individual humans to include all humans as a species. It made him wonder if even the most brilliant AI experts really understood what they had created. A memory from his early days in the Marines popped into his head, of a course he'd been required to take after he was out of basic, something called Challenges in Emergency Martial Actions. He'd braced himself for a series of jargon-filled lectures on how to CYA after a FUBAR and then discovered the title actually translated as Whom You Should Fuck Over When and How Badly. One of the scenarios the instructor had hammered away at was the trolley problem. Hicks had already known that one. You're driving a train and the brakes give out. If you stay on course, you'll kill 5 people, but if you switch tracks, you'll kill only 1 person. Whom should you fuck over? He'd always been resistant to the trolley problem, partly because of all the incessant arguing it inspired, but mostly because it sanitized the situation so much that it stripped all of the truth out of it. Life wasn't a neat series of discrete events. It was messy and dirty and chaotic. In an emergency, you didn't have time to argue about the ethics of a situation or whether your moral compass could find true moral north or anything other than, what the fuck, what the fuck, what the fuck? Finding out he was right about that had been no consolation. And yet, after everything that had happened to him, here he was thinking about that fucking trolley. Well, there was always time after the fact to think, rethink, and overthink all the aspects and permutations and implications of a situation. He sneaked a look at Bishop, wondering if anyone realized the trolley problem was running for real now, and an artificial person was driving. "She's dying," Bishop said. The sudden break in the silence made Hicks jump. "Radiation poisoning," Bishop added, nodding at the Vietnamese woman. "Is there anything we can do?" Hicks asked, even though he knew better. "Unfortunately, no," Bishop replied. "The interceptor's anti-radiation system neutralized the ship itself and made it safe for passengers, although I'd recommend regular decontam treatments until we dock somewhere, just to be on the safe side. If she'd had a vac suit on when they nuked Radina, she might have a chance of pulling through. Although she was so close to the explosion, I'm not sure a suit would have given her much protection. All we can do is make her comfortable, if she lets us." Hicks nodded. He had a feeling she'd resist any kindness for as long as she could. "You're going to have to start thinking of yourselves as a species, as well as a civilization," Bishop went on. "You," meaning humanity as a whole, "you're faced with something you've never had before. A natural enemy." Moving carefully so he wouldn't wake Spence, Hicks got up and slipped a folded jacket under her head. He was about to join Bishop at the console when his gaze fell on the Vietnamese woman, and he brought her a thermos of water. She shook her head and turned away from him. He left the thermos beside her and sat down in the pilot seat.
"Humans, as a species, spent a few thousand years running and hiding from things that wanted to eat us," Hicks said. "Then we figured out how to make weapons to protect ourselves."
Bishop shook his head.
"Those predators just went in search of easier prey, which allowed humanity to ascend to the top of the food chain. You've been there ever since, not simply undefeated, but also unchallenged." He put down his tools. "These aliens aren't wild animals you can drive away with a few warning shots. Weapons don't scare them off. They're dedicated to killing. Humans as a species have never faced this kind of threat." "I'm pretty sure the aliens kill all living things," Hicks said, remembering Pocket Madagascar. "Not just us."
"They're
still your natural enemy, Corporal, as relentless in killing as humans are at surviving. Think about it. They don't kill for food, dominance, resources. They don't even kill for sport. Hicks shifted uncomfortably in the pilot seat. They have no discernible language, Bishop went on. They don't group in families or communities for mutual benefit or even protection. In fact, they seem completely unaware that they can be hurt or killed. Until I saw the Queen assert itself as their leader, I'd have said they were barely aware of each other. He paused, frowning a little. They may be an enemy to all forms of life, but none more so than human beings. You're a real glass-half-full kind of artificial person, aren't you? Hicks said with a faint laugh. Humans'll just have to stay out of their way. You can't. Bishop's calm voice now had a hint of urgency. The universe isn't big enough for both of you. Hicks gave him a skeptical look. What's that supposed to mean? You have to figure out where they came from, where they're still coming from, and put an end to them right there, at the source. Bishop leaned forward a little. This isn't merely interspecies competition. These creatures are to biological life as antimatter is to matter. You have to track them down to their place of origin and wipe them out. Obliterate them. Nothing less than total extinction. Scorch the earth and salt it so that nothing can ever grow there again. The trolley was picking up speed, Hicks thought.
You know, I've heard that kind of thing before, he said, but only from crazy extremists.
Bishop shook his head again.
You need to understand this is war, and it's a fight to the death, to complete death, to extinction. The enemy doesn't have any other mode. I've been fighting in wars for most of my adult life, Hicks said. The entirety of human history is pretty much one war after another. Those were wars between humans, Bishop said. Humans always thought they were their own worst enemy. But that isn't true anymore. You have met the enemy. And for the first time, it isn't you.
Hicks had no answer for that.
It's a Darwinist universe, Bishop said after a moment. Will humanity be the ultimate survivor, or will it be the aliens?
The question hung in the air. Hicks glanced at Spence, still peacefully asleep, then turned to the Vietnamese pilot, now stretched out on the floor. Bishop had gone back to work on the console, so for the time being there was nothing for him to do, except maybe get started on the existential crisis.
Bishop, you're good, but you're not quite right about this one, Hicks thought. We have met the enemy, and we've mistaken it for something our plowshares can beat into a weapon. Not that it really made any difference.
Some unmeasured time later, the proximity alarm roused Hicks out of a semi-doze. He popped up another screen on the control panel and ran through the feeds from the external cameras. All but one of the surveillance devices on the roof had been damaged by the aliens in their desperation to hang on, but one was all he needed to see the enormous letters on the belly of the spacecraft above them. USS Kansas City. Bay doors opened, revealing a brightly lit hold.
We're going to Kansas City, Hicks thought, limp with relief. Kansas City, here we come.
Ripley and Newt appeared fleetingly in his mind's eye. They were replaced by Hudson, Apone, Vasquez, Gorman, and the rest of the squad from LV-426. Tully, Charles A., joined them along with Jackson, wearing her baseball cap with the light pen, and Martinez and Rossetti, and then Anchor Point itself just before it faded to white. Understanding bloomed in his mind. Complete and fully formed. It still wasn't over. The horrors that he and Ripley and Newt and Spence and Bishop had survived, that had killed the LV-426 colony, a squad of good Marines and two entire space stations. It was on him to make sure it all hadn't been for nothing. Damn it. He just couldn't get a break.
This concludes the reading of Alien 3, the unproduced first draft screenplay William Gibson by Pat Cadigan. Copyright 2021 by 20th Century Studios. This book was read by Bradford Hastings. This unabridged recording was produced in 2021. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Publishing. For a complete listing of our titles, visit our website at www.downpour.com. Thank you.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.